Hey friend, welcome to Houston Made, a show where I, Rusty Gates, get to talk with local Houston-based entrepreneurs and business owners about what it's like to be in the middle of that journey and selfishly gain insights as I build my own business. Over the last month, I've had a couple of really great opportunities with my businesses, and I've missed a couple of episodes here on the show. This small break gave me a chance to reflect on what I'm building here, which made me want to do something a little different this week. In this episode, I got to sit down with my good friend, Luke Bronner, the host of great podcasts such as 30 Pop, The H, and Fun Parts. He's also the director of Milieu Media, the neighborhood of podcasts and storytellers where the show lives. And in this episode, he was kind enough to join me for a bit of a meta conversation where we talk a bit about Houston Made and my experience making it over the last 5 months. Luke is one of the most thoughtful people I know, and I am grateful for every chance I get to hang out with him. His influence has shaped so much of what I'm making here, and the show is only better for it. So, listen in as Luke and I discuss our Enneagram numbers in relationship to our ambition, lessons I've learned from making the show, and our shared love of Glenn Hansard.
Do you want to welcome? Do you want me to welcome?
I'll welcome you.
Who's the host? I don't know. I don't know who's hosting this episode.
I think that we're in it now. Luke Bronner, Thank you for joining me in your house today.
It's my pleasure. You know, I was here anyway.
So. The commute.
It was nice. It was all the way downstairs and back up. It was good.
Pretty easy.
Welcome. You welcome to my home.
Welcome to my show. Yeah, here we go.
Perfect.
I love it. Man, thank you. People may or may not know who you are. This is my introduction to you, Luke Bronner, the shepherd. This is the term that I've decided after our conversation and then just being a part of the neighborhood a while, the shepherd of the Milieu Media neighborhood of podcasts and storytellers. The show wouldn't be here without you in so many ways, both your encouragement and then your help producing and your calming of my nerves when I'm freaking out about, like, I don't know how to make this thing work. And you're like, you just do it.
That's so funny. It's hard for me to imagine you having nerves about anything. You just don't strike me as an anxious person in any way.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's all deceptive. It's the Enneagram 7's curse, right? It is all of this enthusiasm just wrapped around a bundle of fear, of just head fear. It's not so much emotions. I definitely feel anxiety, but it's head fear. It's all thinking through everything and think it's fear of pain, failure, suffering, and being like, I'm going to do everything in my power to avoid that. So anyway, there's that.
Yeah. I was going to ask about your Enneagram number actually when we talked about doing this episode, because I'm a 3 and I see so many similarities. I also see so many differences.
Yeah. Like
your comfort in your own skin, chief among them. But yeah, I see so many similarities in the amount of things that you seem to be taking on in your life. And one, in that you have so many varied interests. And two, that what I recognize in myself and in you is maybe an inability to say no to any of them. And it makes me wonder, like, what all are you saying no to? What creative ideas do you have that you are not saying yes to?
Yeah. In this day and age, the things I'm saying no to, it is hard to think of them immediately off the top of my head. So when I started the show, it was just Rusty Gates Real Estate. Now I have Rusty Gates Real Estate and Rusty Gates Media, which are both active legal companies that are making money. Rusty Gates Media is still pretty young and is paying off a lot of the assets that I'm buying, the tools that I'm buying, but profitable just slightly. And so between that, I've had to start saying no to some projects. And it's the worst. It's the absolute worst. The fear of letting a client down because I've got too many things, that's just a bit stronger than the fear of missing out. And so there's some creative projects that I'm saying no to. I want to get back into running. And
I was going to ask how the 1,000-mile year was going.
It stalled out. Man, that was a real pride issue, because as a 7, I tend to get excited about a lot of things very quickly. I say yes to a lot of things. I have a lot of varied interests, as you've said. And one of my deepest insecurities is that people will see me as flighty and impulsive. I am, in fact, flighty and impulsive.
Just don't want to know.
I just don't want anybody to believe that, despite the fact that it's true. And so doing things with longevity and doing things consistently is a very high goal of mine. And so the running thing, that was like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to run 1,000 miles, and that's going to force me to run slow and run steady so I don't get hurt. Made it through 6 months of the year and really was building a habit that unlike I'd ever built before. And despite my best efforts, still hurt myself in a different way. And it is what it is. Like, it was just like a lesson learned of, I needed more accountability and support around me to slow myself down, but I just kept pushing, which is how it goes. And then once that happened, I really had a hard time getting back into it. And so mm-hmm. I've weekly just been thinking, I'm going to go run. But then I look at my hours in the day and I go, okay, well, if I spend an hour running, like there's no, like that's a loss of a lot of things.
Yeah.
So I've had to just say, okay, I don't think running, I can get back into it right now. Like when can I get 15 minutes to do some stretching and take care of myself physically that way? I don't know what else I'm saying no to. So some social media stuff. So the funny thing was, you know, I created Rusty Gates Media specifically to try and get sponsorships for this show. Mm-hmm. That was the thing. I created the legal entity so that I could say, hey, I'm creating this show. I'm going to get sponsors. And then even if they're not insanely big sponsors, but local sponsors will give me a little bit of money to compensate me for the time that I'm spending putting into this show. And I did that. And like the week that I filed that paperwork, I had three different, not even friends, but acquaintances who had small businesses ask if I would run their social media for them or do some content creation for them. And that was the first kind of like, oh yeah. Because I've been making all these videos for myself as an excuse to not do real estate work. Because I always thought if I make a video that is advertising for me and I can get in front of hundreds, maybe thousands of people instead of like cold calling, hey, who do you know who wants to buy or sell a house? And so I'd been doing all that social media stuff as quote unquote real estate work. People are seeing that right around that time. They asked me to do some social media management. So there are a couple of those that have asked for proposals and I just am not doing it. Because I want to, in the sense that I want to work with those people. Mm-hmm. But when I think about the work that entails for them, I don't really want to do that work.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing, one of the hardest things about Houston Made right now is I came out really strong with the social media game.
Oh yeah.
Because in my mind, there was no other way that anybody's going to listen to this show or hear about this show is other than organic social media reach. Maybe I could have done some paid advertising stuff, but I didn't have a lot of money and I didn't even want to put $20 into it. Didn't know if that would even pay off. So I spent time making reels and taking the clips and recording the video. And I would spend hours and hours doing that. And I think it worked. I think it helped. But that's been like, so it's such a time consuming part of it. Mm-hmm. So I like it, but imagine doing that for three other people and then try to do real estate.
Yeah. Oh, I can't imagine. I've worked in the social media world before and I, you know, I was just writing content. I mean, so I was just a copywriter for people where I was, which ruined the whole thing for me, by the way, when I realized like these people who have, you know, millions of followers are not actually on social media. Like they probably don't even know how to log into their own Twitter account. And these were people like at the time that I admired in the world in which I existed, but yeah, ruined the whole thing for me. But even just coming up, like I would turn in, you know, like 14 tweets a week or something per artist that I was working with. And even just coming up with that content was such a life suck, man. Like I hated it.
Yeah.
I enjoy writing. I used to really enjoy social media, but yeah, so I get it. I can't imagine. I am always tempted by that. Like it's a thing on my resume that like I can write social media or I can, but I just have no interest whatsoever in doing that for anyone
ever. Yeah.
So I get it. But
yeah.
So let's talk about Houston Made.
Yeah.
We are on Houston Made now.
Yeah, here it is.
Tell me, like, you and I were talking about that show for a very long time before it launched. And now it's been out for, what'd you say, like 6 months?
Yeah, it was mid-May. So
okay.
June, July, August, September, October. We're a good 5 months in. Okay. Solid 5 months out.
So how are you feeling? How is it compared to expectations? What do you love about it? What do you not love about it?
Yeah.
What's working?
So what's working, I knew that I really enjoyed these conversations, right? And it was, we talked about that before. I've talked about this a lot of trying to find those. I think with podcasting, you have to find something, obviously, you care about. Otherwise, you are going to have pod fade. You can get excited about being a podcaster. But if the idea, if you don't enjoy it, mm-hmm. like you're not, it's going to be hard to find an audience and then also hard to keep maintained. But I love these conversations. I talk about this stuff with business owners, entrepreneurs, aspiring business owners, aspiring entrepreneurs, hopeful, like one day, all the time, regardless of whether I was on Houston Made. And getting to have these conversations is a dream. And the fact, so that there are a few quotes that I've like committed to memory, but your words are one of them. And it, I've said it a couple times on the show, but I think about all the time. And you said, I think what we all really want out of life is to talk to people we admire about things in which we're mutually interested. And doing that in front of a microphone and calling it a podcast gives us the ability to do that with people we would otherwise not have access to. And I mean, I remember when you said that one, I was like, oh, that's a great clip. And two, and that's
the, always creating.
Always creating. It's always looking for the soundbite. I was like, oh, that's going to be great. But it was so true. And I knew it was true in the moment. I knew it was a great clip. I didn't realize how deeply true it was and how deeply true it would be for me in that, like, oh, this show has been an avenue for me to get to talk with people that I would not have, that would not have given me the time of the day. But for me to say, hey, I have a show. It's called Houston Made. And this is what it is. Would you be interested? And I mean, I don't think I've ever gotten a no. I have gotten some maybe not right nows, or I've had one where there was an original yes and then they didn't like some. There was a weird interaction.
And name and shame, man. Who was it?
Name and shame. I was like, oh, I was tempted. Yeah, they didn't. They wanted me to include multiple people on the show, and I was like, "Well, it's really like one person, and it's about their story, and it, as much as it is about the business, like I was like racking my brain to try to figure out how to make it work, and then I was just like, "No, I'm not going to do that," mm-hmm. and so we parted ways. But I was frustrated because I was like, "I think you have a great story. Can't you just share your story?" They had said yes, but so that man, that's the greatest thing, and it. The fact that some people are listening to it, that blows my mind. And if there is one of the lessons I've learned is that people are always watching, people are always listening, even in unexpected people. So that's probably the other thing that's worked really well is that this show has opened doors to me in incredible ways that I would have never fathomed. I've got a speaking opportunity where, that's coming up in a couple weeks, for a local trust company that like works with very, very, like very, like maybe three more varies wealthy people. And because of the show, they tapped me to like moderate this panel between like two legitimate billionaires. Like so it's like going to be a room full of millionaires, two billionaires on the stage and then me in the middle. And that's a trip. And I like legitimately asked them like, you know, I'll be the poorest person there, right? You know that, right? And they essentially said yes, and we've done this event for a long time, and we found that people from our world, you know, don't always, like, they may not, like, have the personality. And we've heard your show, and we know that you would do a great job, and we want you to do it. And that was, like, I would never imagine. I was like, oh, maybe I'll get, like, a local CPA to give me some money, and I'll get to have conversations I want to have, and that will be that. Like, great. So to have opportunities like that, that's blown my mind. And then without Houston Made, Rusty Gates Media in its video production capacities just wouldn't have happened, at least the way that it happened. I mean, I've gotten multiple gigs that have come from these conversations and then people being like, man, you seem like you do a lot of stuff, mm-hmm. video work. I'm like, yeah. And they're like, well, can you do this? And then I'm like, yeah. So that's been a blast. And even the way that it spreads, like, to the point of the trust company gig, it was like one of the vice president's husband has a startup and somehow he came across Houston Made and then said, hey, you should listen to this. And then through that grapevine,
that's like, amazing.
They pegged me. And it is all relationships. I mean, that was probably a value I had going into it, is like, I knew that everything I wanted every person I talked to, I wanted to be a friend.
Mm-hmm.
If that's all I get, great. With a broad definition of friendship, let me be my best friend.
Yeah, yeah. No, I totally get that. And it's the same. I completely relate to that. Like, I think of shows that I've made in the past that the only real payoff for them was that it was an opportunity to sit down with people that I care about, who I otherwise struggle to make time for.
Yeah.
And it's not because I don't love them. It's not because I'm a bad person. It's just because my wiring is such, similar to you, where like I'm always trying to make something. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it's not like using those people for the thing that I'm making. It's like, this is the way that I connect with people. It's to enjoy this thing together. And I love doing it so much that I just want to do it with other people. And so some of my closest friends today are people who, this is what we have in common, is that we sit down with mics. That's how we spend our time together, you know?
Yeah.
And so, and I'm the same as you. Like, it's just fun. It's so much fun. I love doing it.
It's wonderful. And yeah, I mean, I've seen that to be true of you. Proximity matters. I mean, I've got really, really wonderful friends that we text once or twice a week, but you know, if we don't see each other, it's hard to hang out and catch up and do all those things. And then there's other great shows. I mean, My Brother and Me, which then spun off into The Adventure Zone and Sawbones and a whole other slew of McElroy family podcasts, was three brothers that said, hey, like, you're all living across the country. Let's just do this. It'll be a way to talk.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of that. Yeah, yeah. I think there is something to be said for, I don't know, I want to say, like, commercializing your friendships, but it's like, well, if you are going to be doing these things and it's valuable to other people,
mm-hmm.
then let's do that.
For some reason, for me, it makes it easier to just put something on a calendar to be like, well, let's just schedule a time to do this thing, because I owe it now. I have an audience that I want, that I owe them an episode. And so I know that I'm not going to bail on you, which I otherwise probably will. Also, I'm a full on introvert. I'm the opposite of a seven. So I very much, pull away from people when at all possible. And so to obligate myself to an audience allows me to obligate myself freely to friends and loved ones and, or just interesting people. And so.
Do you have a hard time connecting? And I'll answer my own question first, but I do think shared interest matters in a friendship. I mean, we have friends that don't care at all about what I do and don't think I'm impressive in any way, which is great. That's actually humbling and healthy. But it is true that people that I spend the most time with and seek to spend the most time with, like week to week, are people that have those shared values of business entrepreneurship. And a friend of mine and I were talking about, is it bad that my only friends are the people that I'm like collaborating with and work with? And I was like, well, I think you need some friendships that go deeper beyond that, like that have some kind of shared history or whatever beyond what you're working on together. But also, I think that you should be friends with the people that you work with. So I don't know. I guess the question is, do you find that, like, or have your friendships reshaped as you've, you know, built Milieu and built all these shows? Because it's so time consuming that, like, imagine, and again, on the introverted side of things, it's not like you just have bukus of free time that you're like, well, I guess we'll just go hang out at the bar or whatever.
Yeah. I think so. I mean, what I find is that people who are drawn into the work that I'm doing are the easiest to connect with. Because I'm an introvert, it's not an instinct for me to like pursue people, not in social ways. But having a thing that I'm doing and that I'm able to sort of digitally from behind a computer screen invite them into does make it easier for me to connect with them in real life. And maybe that makes me a sociopath. I'm not entirely sure, but I mean, if so, I'll own it that's the case. It doesn't feel like it's my ego that does that, but it's entirely possible that it is. So I don't know. What I know is that like doing things like one of the things that COVID took away that I miss so deeply is doing a monthly event or a biweekly event. You know, we used to do these trivia events and it had nothing to do with me like needing to be the center of attention. Although when I take the Enneagram test, it does say that I'm a seven. I don't identify as a
seven. I tested as a three a lot.
Yeah. Maybe we get our tests
mixed up in the middle.
But so it's not about like needing that attention. There's also, for me, there's just something really familiar about that role. I mean, I played in bands for all of my 20s where mm-hmm. I was the front man. And it had nothing to do with like being comfortable in like my natural state with eyes on me. But having that, being in that position does, I sort of do find in maybe I am a seven. In my anxiety and my fear, I sort of rise to that challenge. And like, I think that like self-consciousness makes me wittier and I can kind of come alive.
Sure.
And so doing that and putting myself in situations where there are people who I feel pursued by because they are expressing an interest in the thing mm-hmm. that I am creating. I don't know. I guess there's something about that like feels really safe to me, makes me feel really safe in my own skin. Mm-hmm. And that's such a foreign feeling like, for me, truly, that like I will take those endorphins all day long. Mm-hmm. Like that's really, really helpful for me.
Well, it's a win-win. I mean, I think the trivia night, the being the front man in the band, it could easily get, I imagine, when you're in your head, oh, I'm just doing this for me and this is like the ego and everyone's praising me and looking at me and this is so exciting. But as someone who attended the trivia nights, as somebody who's attended good concerts, it's not just for the, I mean, I've never once looked at a musician up on stage and be like, you narcissist.
Oh man, I have.
Well, for sure. I also don't go to a lot of concerts, so maybe there's that. But I think about like, you know, I just went to California to see Glenn Hansard.
Yeah. Golly. The envy is so real.
And, you know, I don't look for a second think he's doing this for him. No. Like it's for, like, I just was overjoyed and felt honored to get to sit there and listen. And that was my experience. He offered that. And so, I don't know, I just think about the trivia nights, like you create a space for people. And I think that's sacred work. It's creating a space for people to exist and experience something. I think that's can be selfless. And this goes to the whole dating ourselves, but the whole Friends episode where there's like no selfless act. And like that, even in doing a quote unquote selfless thing, you receive some kind of benefit because you feel good about it. Like you feel good about being altruistic. And it's like, well, you can't ever do anything that's truly selfless.
I'm confident whatever you just said was poignant. I'm hung up on the fact that you think Friends is dating us.
Yeah, dude. It's a world. Wow. I had to.
You say we. I've got to have 10 years on you.
Okay. There is an age difference, but I am stating like this. Born in the 80s.
79.
So close. I'm sorry.
I experienced 6 weeks of the 70s. So
okay.
I'm not like a hippie, but all right, let's move on from that. Here's what I would say. I think, and I want to see if this resonates for you. I'm thinking about this. I mean, what I just said is that like, it was never about being the center of attention. Creating things is an instinct for me. Mm-hmm. And it is a reflex to experiencing the world for me. And I'm learning as I get older that maybe that's not the case for everybody. That's a thing that I just thought we all had in common. And I hear people all the time talking about like, oh, I'm not creative or whatever. And it's like, I do think about creativity a lot, but it's not a thing that I can turn on or turn off. Mm. It's just a thing that's going to happen. And so even with things like Trivia Night, while there are logistics to organize and there's things that have to be done, none of that has ever felt to me like the pursuit of something. It has always felt like just my nature expressing itself. Mm-hmm. Maybe I shouldn't say always, because in most creative instances, when I try to make a living out of that thing, it does end up getting ruined and my motives do shift. And mm-hmm. But I'm curious if that resonates for you, if it's like, how much of the work that you're doing is because you want so desperately to be perceived as a creative person, and how much of it is just like, well, I can't help it. I'm going to do this anyway. If I don't do this project, another one's going to spring up.
I do think that's true. It is crazy to me that, you know, there are people that don't feel the compulsion to create. But then, like I talk about Jess, my wife, not even an instinct in her. Not there is not a bone in her that's like, I want to make something. I want to. It's not that she doesn't want to improve the world. She's an educator, and she definitely wants to do that and do that well. If she creates, she does create these like beautiful PowerPoints, but it's almost always function over form, and it's beautiful in the sense that it accomplishes her goal, and that's it. That's the end to it.
See, I think calling it PowerPoint dates you more than Friends. Sorry.
Sure.
I'm going to be hung up on that.
I know. I struck a nerve. I knew you had a couple years on me. I didn't, you know. Is what it is. I'm just saying is that I went to go use like a computer the other day and literally had, and granted it was a Mac or a PC, but I had to ask a 17-year-old. I was like, I don't know how can you. And so it was the first instance in my life. It's like, I don't have, I have no bearing on how to work this device. Can you come help me?
Yeah.
And it was
that I do resonate with.
It was the worst. So, you know,
my parents, you know, they always need help with whatever technical mm-hmm. thing. And I've always been that person.
Yeah.
But they are PC users, and I haven't had a PC in 20 years. And I mean, truly, when they asked me, I'm like, I'll show you how to do the same thing that you're trying to do on Google, like Google Sheets or something. But like,
I can't do it.
Dad is doing graphic design in Excel, and I'm just like, I can't help you with that. You're doing something wrong, and I don't know what you're doing.
It is truly beyond me. The path diverged so long ago that I don't know. And then there's just, there's all this music I can't keep up. I'm just coming to grips with, as much as I want to be cool, I'm not going to be cool to a certain generation. Like I've just hoped to mm-hmm. own that. We were talking about, creativity. My wife, she's doing the PowerPoints and stuff. But, you know, if she, like, she would find ways to occupy herself, but she's happy to just consume. And I don't say that critically at all. That she would just enjoy world life that way and never make anything if she didn't have to. And
the ambition that lives inside of me thinks like, God, that sounds wonderful. I wish that I was wired that way, at least for like a day.
I
get a break.
See, and I think that's the 3 and 7 differences, because I go, like, I still go, nope. Like, I don't know. I know I will. I do want to create. I want to make things. I want to do things. And it, for me, creation is simply a part of me collecting this menagerie of experiences. And so what I have found is I have some creative mindedness. I think I'm a logical person, whatever the left or right brain that is, I don't know. But I think I pretty think through things pretty linearly. And the skills that I have acquired, I've been surrounded by a lot of creative. My mom's a visual artist. So I have that mindedness. I appreciate art, but I used to say of like Michael Gunger when I was at the church there, is that there are artists and there are people who make art. And I thought at that time, like, Michael is an artist. He sees the world differently. And again, out of that comes a creativity, a creation that is unlike other things. I think that I make art, or I make stuff. Sometimes it's art, maybe. But my desire to create has always been in service of creating relationships with other people, creating experiences, and opening doors for myself to have more of those two things. And so the podcast, video work, all of it.
Yeah, man, I think that's a really great distinction. Like, I think there is maybe another way of articulating that would be to say there is art that is born of expression, and there is art that is born of invitation. And so, like, because I actually resonate more with you, I think that, like, I look at people like Michael Gunger, who's not a person I pay a whole lot of attention to.
Nor do I at this point.
But he still pops up in my world mm-hmm. occasionally, and I'm like, good Lord, he's talented. Mm-hmm. And I feel like whatever he does, whenever he opens his mouth, it is expression, and it is therefore very easy for me to call it art. Mm-hmm. I think that I have that experience occasionally, that like there are things, there's art that I have made that is born of expression. Mm-hmm. But similar to you, it's usually about just trying to connect with someone. And I was actually thinking about this the other day, that like when I think about Milieu and when I think about all of the different creative sort of avenues that I've walked in my life, it has 100% of the time been about saying, like, is there anybody out there who feels what I feel?
Mm-hmm.
Is there anybody out there that resonates with this idea or with this thing or with this combination of words, like be they musical or spoken, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's different than the like classical artists who are creating as an expression of what's inside of them.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe there's in a Venn diagram, there's a whole lot of overlap.
Oh, but, certainly. I think there's a lot of overlap. And I think that there is some of that, which is like, I'm going to make this whether anybody sees it or not. Right. And Michael, and he comes back to that, but whatever the quote unquote true artists are, there might be some element is, again, they cannot help it. And there are moments where I've had that where I'm creating this thing and I don't care what anybody thinks. And it's this, you know,
mm-hmm.
And photography has been a small place of that for me right now where it's, but if there's that definition where it's being made to be seen or not seen, I still know that that defines art because one of the better things I've heard is, you know, someone having an experience or a feeling or something and then trying, again, inviting someone to try and share that thing. So a painting trying to capture this moment and this feeling of this field, it being an impressionist field, might make you feel a certain way. And maybe that's what the artist was feeling. I think what I do specifically with my video work, if that's like the most creative, quote unquote, creative work that I do, the artistry of it comes from, I think that I have a natural gift for seeing beauty, in the like the everyday moments in the, mundane activities of life. And my natural seven enthusiasm has always been healthiest when it's pointed at other people. And what I found is that when I take a camera and point it at somebody else, I can capture some of that enthusiasm that I naturally see. And I've had to learn, and my wife has been a really great lesson in this, is that people don't see the world that I see it.
Hmm.
Sevens, because we're so disconnected from our negative emotions, because we're disconnected from some of the more painful ranges of emotion, we are typically, factually, happier than other people. So while I do carry anxiety and I do carry, I think, some manic depressive tendencies. The fact of the matter is that according to the Enneagram, I'm probably actually just naturally happier than you.
I mean, the fact that you chuckled when you said manic depressive tendencies is, I think, a tell in some
way. It's a sign for sure. And I see that in myself. I see myself being like, okay, here we go. We're riding this wave. And then I see the pendulum have to swing the other way. My problem is I just don't always know what to do with it. That the best way I've heard it described, there's a Enneagram 7 meme that was going around on Instagram that was saying, when sevens experience trauma, grief, whatever, people will say, well, you just need to like experience those emotions to get past them. And the seven's response will be, okay, can you show me how? Because I don't know. And that is totally true of my grief of the painful range of emotions. I won't even say negative emotions. I don't want to judge emotions, but just a lesson from my therapist. But from the seemingly painful range of emotions, I don't always know how to engage.
Hmm.
And so that said, my art tends to be, or my creative work tends to be very positive because it's just like my natural state and it's where I want to live.
Mm-hmm.
I get real contemplative from 10:30 to 1:30 in the morning with a little bit of bourbon and Glenn Hansard vinyl record on. And then like, that's when I can like tap into that emotion. And so we went to the Glenn Hansard concert and I was crying through the first three songs. And Jess was like, are you okay? And I was like, it was Pavlovian for me. It's like he touches a part in me that I just am not able to access like that. And
I mean, he is an artist. Like, gosh, I hate you so much for that.
That's why.
Did you get to meet him?
No.
Okay, thank God. Because I would have to kick you out, right?
Yeah, now. I didn't try. I think that there's some things where I go, we don't have to.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I don't know what I would want from that experience.
Yeah.
I'd want a lot.
Yeah. You'd want to be friends. You'd want to feel like you are kindred and equals, but
I would be and I would be conniving like to try and figure out the right thing to say so that we would end up at a bar and be like, hey, I'm here with my wife for 36 hours. I'm going to send her to the Airbnb.
Oh,
and I'm going to go hang out with
her. You're safe to say that because, you know, she's not listening to the show.
She's not going to listen to the show. But she would know like that would be the instinct. And that's how high that I would want that.
Yeah.
And so I was just like, you know what? No, like this is enough for me.
Yeah. Maybe there is something to just letting people stay on the pedestals where we put them. When you do that knowingly, I think that's helpful. Like, I don't think that you have any question in your mind about Glenn Hansard's humanity, which makes it that much nicer to just leave him on a pedestal.
Yeah.
And I'm the same way, man. Like, I still, to this day, it still kills me that he and Marquetta aren't a couple. Like, I don't want to know that. I want to watch once and just feel their love for one another for the rest of my life and just live in that delusion. Yeah. And I'm fine with that. And so.
And let it be.
I've had plenty of heroes that I've lost, and so.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There is a certain level of ignorance is bliss, and yeah, you just like, let that be what it is, which is the whole thing of once. That's the whole thing of, like, this is what it is, and now we're going back into the world for it to end the way that it ends. I don't even put the connection together, but us leaving the concert is probably in part to that lesson subconsciously playing in my brain of sometimes it's just like, no, this is going to be it, and we'll see you later.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's good stuff. So Glenn is great.
Let's go back to Houston Maid.
Yeah, oh yeah. We can talk about that.
What's been the biggest challenge?
I think the biggest challenge has been the time commitment and living up to the standards that I've set for myself. So, I mean, over the last 3 weeks, I've missed two episodes, which is a lot. And I mean, you were acknowledging the fact that, I don't think you were praising it per se, but acknowledging the fact that I still produced an episode like while I had COVID, like and had COVID symptoms. I was like, via Zoom.
To be real clear, I was calling you crazy.
Yeah.
What you may have received as praise is like, hey, dumbass, take a break.
It's a natural, that natural enthusiasm is often delusional.
Yeah.
It's like, And man, I just, because again, it goes down to the fact that I just don't want anybody to think that this is, I'm not taking this seriously.
Yeah.
And that's how deep that insecurity runs. Mm-hmm. That I'm like, no, I don't care. Like I am dying and I need to sleep, but I have to get this out. It's stronger than my need for that. And so just living up to that standards, the social media stuff, you know, I had originally had been partnered with, a good friend, Mac Ryan Creative, who really helped get the show off the ground and helped organize my thoughts to get the show off the ground. And then I got to a place where my businesses were running out of money and I was like, hey, we can't work together anymore because I can't pay you. And so then I just took it all on myself and was doing it I thought fairly well. And then it just, as more and more things got added to my plate, I was like, this is the thing that I can't keep up. And that sucks. Like I don't have a huge following on Instagram with Houston Maid, but it's something that, again, I think added to my own validity. And so I really wanted to keep it going, and keeping that consistency has been a struggle. And then it's just, by no means am I complaining. I'm going to state that because the show is a gift. I love doing it. It is a privilege to get to have these conversations. But it is more work than I ever anticipated it being. And it became more work than it ever was supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to do everything via Zoom. And then I did a couple in person. And I was like, well, now I can't go back to Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
It's in person. Like, being able to read body language, being able to pick up on pauses and pacing, all of that was so much better. And so now what went to an hour of recording becomes an hour and a half of setup, recording, tear down, pictures, selfie, plus a commute. You know, drove to Pearland to meet with Laura Perez. It was like an hour drive and an hour and a half back because I hit traffic and I forgot that there was traffic. So, you know, but that's just, it's all learning. And then doing that without it being profitable. Again, I have gained so much and not complaining. I'm so grateful. I'm grateful to all of you people who decide to listen to all of this rambling. But I had this instinct that I'm going in and we're getting sponsors out of the gate because I can sell this. I can sell the concept. I can sell the idea. Who doesn't want to be a sponsor on this show? We are capturing small business owners and entrepreneurs or people who want to be. So come on. And because the show was so much fun to make, even the social media stuff was so much fun to make, and it was so time consuming, that just fell to the wayside immediately. Mm-hmm. I was like, that doesn't, I don't care about that right now. Like, we'll get to it. And so even with all that grandiose planning, it fell to the wayside, and it's something that every once in a while I'm like, oh yeah, I should do that. I should really work on that. And then I'll send an email and then not think about it for another couple weeks. Mm-hmm. So, there's not a lot that's just been awful. I think learning how to do this, when I talk about how grateful I am that people listen to this show, I have so much to learn about having a conversation and leading a conversation and guiding and shaping. And, it's every episode I walk away being like, oh, I wish I would ask this. I wish I wouldn't have like talked so much in this segment. And, I appreciate people's willingness to listen despite being not great at it. I think I'm okay at it. I have some confidence in it. I do all right. But again, my own standard is just want it to be better.
Yeah. Yeah. You clearly haven't listened to like 99% of the podcasts that are out there that people are recording directly into their phone. And
I'm not.
Yeah.
That's absolutely
true. I'm just saying your standard is different than the average listener's standard. And I'm thankful for that because otherwise, you know, my standard is too. And
yeah.
I don't think we would be partnered together. And if you're recording this.
Well, it goes to a tell of Milieu Media, and it means a lot to be as a part of this network. I gladly say all that stuff at the end of every episode. Listeners, if you ever listen to the end of the episode, I don't know if you do or not. I need a better way of interacting with the audience because I love recording the outro every week. And I don't know if people listen all the way through. I listen, record it fresh every week. And, but being able to say week after week that, you know, we're part of the Milieu Media neighborhood of podcasts and storytellers and, I don't know, the values that you've set up in this network and in this neighborhood matter a lot to me, and they've shaped me a lot and have shaped the way I pursue guests, who I pursue as guests, the way I pursue conversations. And one of the things you say is like, we care about doing a good job, like, and making it sound good. Mm-hmm. And that matters in this world where everything can be such a low bar. It doesn't have to be.
Well, and in this world where the tools are becoming more and more accessible. I mean, like, I don't know if you've seen the cinema mode on the new iPhones. Like, it's unbelievable.
It's crazy.
And every seventh grader is going to have that in their pocket, you know, mm-hmm. which is wonderful for the state of art in the world, mm-hmm. I think. The ability to create, for creativity to become an instinct, is just getting easier and easier and easier. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a good thing.
I think it means
there's more art in the world.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we also live at a time where cynicism is on the rise. And so that's why I'm not positive it's great for art, but that's irrelevant. I would love to know, like, this is sort of an intermission, I guess, for the season as you're sort of gearing up to like, finish out the year with a bunch of new interviews and stuff. Like, what are you most looking forward to with the show?
It all comes down to the people, right? I think that everything that the show is about is people and their stories. And I've got some really interesting people coming up. I think they're interesting to me. So I assume that they'll be interesting to other people, but we've got musicians, visual artists. So we've got more creative folks that are coming on that's what they do. My hope is that they're just more conversations that people want to hear. I don't know. It seems abstract, but it really comes down to looking at the list of people and I go, oh, these are going to be fun. Mm-hmm. And, not that I have any of them that I've looked back and been like, oh, I'm dreading this conversation, but,
You can tell me if you did. I mean, you can tell me, I can handle it.
Yeah.
If I was the obligatory.
Not at all. No, especially if nothing else, it was that quote. I don't know. It was that quote that you said that I can quote verbatim. That was a huge thing. And then you talking about Pod Fade in that episode when we recorded it. I mean, it lit a fire under me in a way that I could not have manufactured for myself as far as motivation goes. Because I was just like, I'm not going to Pod Fade. I'm not going to do it. I will not. And like, there's a lot of stuff that I'll give up and quit in my life. I'm not going to pod fade it. It'll be on my terms. So
I remember feeling that. I always approach things with that same vigor and with shows at least. And inevitably it does come. I think it comes later for me than most. And, you know, they say like the average, I think, is 7 episodes in or something. And for me, it's usually like 50 episodes in or something. But then I'm like, I'm getting really tired. And so I've learned to build in breaks, which is the other thing. Like my encouragement to you, like you made a comment about you've missed 2 episodes in 3 weeks. Like, so what?
Yeah.
I think the people who are listening to this show are listening because they love you. It's not just the content. It's like, and that's where, like, if the conversations are interesting to you and you're excited about them, they're probably, your audience is probably going to love it because you are the person we're following. And so we trust your curation of these, of these conversations. And so I say that to say, like, build in some breaks, man, take some breaks. We want you to, your audience want you to, and we Milieu Media Group want you to, to like push pause. It will make the art better. It will make the conversations richer. And you deserve it. You deserve to get to just enjoy some margin in your life.
Yeah, a little
I'm
bit.
Kind of saying this so that I listen back to it later and hear and hear it too. But
yeah, we have to do that. I think that's totally true and valid. And it probably would have been really good to go into it, lesson learned, to have said, okay, I'm going to make 20 episodes and that'll be boom, season one. And not having that in mind to say, where's the breaking point here? Like, this is just in perpetuity. But, you know, I also, it's a good lesson. You know, I've been so inspired by people like Casey Neistat, and you know, he did this like 500 and something consecutive days of vlogging. And that is, I aspire to that. There is a sick fascination with that level of like dedication and commitment to produce something. And I also just think that I get better at most things just by doing it. So I do watch, I listen to a lot of interviews and I'm like taking notes in my head, but I just don't think I'm ever really going to get better until I just have more conversations, make the mistakes and then have to edit those mistakes. And then that pain of editing the mistake or missing that question or phrasing it wrong or cutting somebody off, the pain of those things is the real thing that teaches me to be better.
Yes.
And so I want to keep doing it, and I want to do my 500 episodes because I am it's not just the opportunities or the potential sponsors. It is what I think that will do for me is building my skill as a conversationalist, as a moderator, as whatever. And I want that. And he has now been off of YouTube consistently for 18 months, 2 years, and the few conversations that he has had publicly since then, he's like, oh no, I was incredibly unhealthy and hurting people.
Yeah, I bet.
and hurting his marriage and hurting his children and just the way he was viewing the world. So yeah, I think that I can maybe not go 500. No, obviously I didn't, but I think that this next batch is not going to be 500 and I can find a space to do that. And yeah, and create a natural season of break and rest for the show.
Yeah. The last thing I'll say, just to comment on what you were just saying, like about improving by doing it. I found that the same for myself. I had to, everybody talks about like, oh, I don't like how I sound on a microphone. Yeah. Well, us either. You know, you like that's part of it. It's like, if you create a scenario in which you can get on your own nerves enough, in which you can annoy yourself enough, you will change your behavior. And
that's
what I found. Like, I became a better conversationalist. I asked better questions in normal conversations with people because I heard the way I came off in an interview. And I'm a little bit out of practice, which will probably come through in this episode, but
you and me both.
That's all I was going to say, is there is something about creating a scenario in which you can annoy yourself.
Oh my gosh.
In an ongoing way. To where you will annoy yourself less as you move forward. And so
you edit out, you know, 38 ums in every minute and it's a 60-minute podcast, you'll stop saying,
you hear your mouth clicking enough that you start hydrating more. You like learn to drink water during the day, and a little less coffee.
So many things. I know that my enthusiasm, my gratitude, it is so strong. I often have thought, I've gotten this from a lot of good friends that go like, yeah, when I met you, I thought you were an asshole. And they're like, yeah, I got to know you. And I saw that there was more beyond the enthusiasm and the rah, 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 that all of that. But also that is genuine, that there is that. And so I try to say every episode, I'm so grateful for people listening. It means the world to me. And I understand that by saying it a lot, maybe it cheapens it a little bit, but I'm so grateful. I think about the things that I've gotten to do in my life, and I get that I manufactured this situation, right? That I made this happen, mm-hmm. and I convinced you to let the show be a part of the neighborhood, and I have convinced these people to talk with me, and I get that I did that. But people listening to it and sharing it and it continuing to grow is totally out of my control, and people don't have to, and they don't have to listen to this. They don't have to listen to these conversations. And so when I check and I see, hey, people are downloading this show, people are downloading it on Sundays when I haven't posted, and that's still crazy to me. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate the mess out of that. Maybe it goes to what you said. I think you said it earlier that your creation kind of can come out of this place of, here I am as anyone out there that like feels this way or sees this, or like, am I alone in this? And my fascination with all of these things, I have felt like an outsider in a lot of ways because I was chasing these things that seemed so unattainable to me. And just through that, I've encountered more and more people that are chasing the same things very quietly. Maybe it's a fear of failure. Maybe it's a fear of being judged. Maybe it's a fear of reaching beyond our status or perceived status or whatever it is. But other people are dreaming too. And I do want this show, I hope it inspires people. I appreciate the kind words you say about me and the things that I'm doing. And because I sometimes struggle to be like, is this matter? Am I doing anything? Is it working? And so when I hear that other people are listening and appreciating, and then that's encouraging them to do whatever, that is one of the great honors of my life.
Yeah,
for sure.
Absolutely.
So I love doing this, and I'm grateful to be a part of the neighborhood. And I want to continue to tell interesting stories from diverse perspectives. And I'm grateful that I get to share my own and that people listen. That's really nice.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate your vulnerability in doing that. Like, I think that what you just said is dead on. Like, I think maybe not everyone, but so many people have this in them, and they have this desire in them, and we just need somebody to go first. Like, mm-hmm. sometimes that's all it is. It's just mm-hmm. somebody to just be like, well, I'll put my stuff out there. And I think maintaining the perspective you have of like, you're not entitled to anyone's time. You're not entitled to their attention. And so when they offer it, when they give it, it is a gift and should be received as such. And so I think that's just dead on, man. But hey, thanks for letting me sit in your seat for an episode. This
was
fun.
I appreciate it. This was nice to talk about it, and good to hang out with you.
Yeah.
All right, talk to you soon.
See you.
A huge thank you to Luke and to you for listening to this episode of Houston Made. As I said in the show, it's both a privilege and a joy to get to have these conversations, and I'm honored that you would take the time to even listen to them. If you haven't done so, please go find Luke on Instagram at Luke Brawner, Brawner, where you can keep up with all that he's got going on over at Milieu Media, and consider joining his Patreon for as little as $1 a month. After you're done with this episode, go find one of his shows, like 30 Pop. It's a weekly peek back at music, movies, sports, fashion, politics, and news from 30 years ago. Seriously, it is a treat, and it will make you all kinds of nostalgic in the best ways. If this is your first time listening to Houston Made, I'd absolutely recommend that after 30 Pop, you go check out some of our other episodes with guests from all kinds of industries, ranging from chefs to realtors, home good makers to merch designers. If you are interested in connecting further, you can find me on Instagram at Rusty J. Gates or the show at Houston Made Podcast. I'm also still looking for great sponsors, so if you're interested, hit me up at RustyGatesMedia.com. Houston Made is hosted by me, Rusty Gates, produced and edited in collaboration with Luke Brawner. Our artwork was designed by Stephanie Leal and Sarah Alwegvi in collaboration with Mac Ryan Creative. Credit for our theme music goes to Old Friends, New Friends. Houston Made is glad to be a part of the Milieu Media neighborhood of podcasts and storytellers. We are people who care deeply about human connection, and in our neighborhood, we find that connection by hearing and appreciating one another's stories and by sharing our own. To find more shows made by amazing storytellers from all kinds of backgrounds, visit milieumedia.com.